So, good evening, everyone. I thought I would continue with a theme that I've been developing in the last few talks, and a theme that I've also been writing about in my blog recently. And the basic theme is that enlightenment is not enough. I've been thinking about this on a number of different levels. One level has to do with for ourselves. So to put it most simply, this practice is quite miraculous. And we truly can awaken through this practice to a kind of intimacy with the world that is exquisite and beautiful. And I'm sure that many of us have had glimmers of this, tastes of this, that keep bringing us back to the cushion. The kind of sweetness of the recognition of how deeply interwoven we are with the sunlight and the songs of birds and with one another as we walk through the Zendo. This is not enough. We still have to cook our dinner. We still have to clean our bathrooms, or we live in squalor and starve. If we struggle with illness, we need to see the doctor, whether that is physical illness or mental illness. There are all these different ways that we really need to take care of ourselves. And this practice is not enough. And sometimes people have this, by that I mean this practice of awakening is not enough. This practice defined more broadly, we might describe as enough. And that would be including skillful means in our practice. The skillful means of eating when we are hungry, of sleeping when we are tired. This is very Zen. Of taking medicine when we are sick. Of cleaning the bathroom when it's dirty. All of these ways of self-care, so important to our practice, and done with complete attentiveness and mindfulness. This is what makes it Zen practice. This idea of doing our practice both, we might say, in the world of the absolute and the world of form, and these worlds are not different. These worlds are one, but we talk about them differently. We talk about this absolute practice of Shikantaza, where we recognize, the water that makes up the individual waves, and the practice of skillful means where we're working with the individual waves. Both sides of our practice essential and very important to this work of saving all beings. And so this work includes ourselves, taking care of ourselves, taking care of our homes, taking care of our lives. The next thing that I talked about a little bit was taking care of our world. This practice of practicing skillful means, if you will, with our planet. Being awake to our consumption. You know, it's amazing how this practice of attending to our planet helps us see time and again how badly we abuse this planet. Trying to go through the supermarket without buying any plastic is essentially impossible. Trying to get around without burning fossil fuels, or these things are real challenges. And every single time that we get in our car. Not that we should be ridden with guilt, but I think we should be awake to our deep interconnectedness with this planet and the way that it sustains us. The fact that we are breathing the very air that we are polluting. The fact that we are eating, many folks, eating the fish that eat the plastic that we put into the ocean. To be awake to these things, to be mindful. This is part of our Zen practice. It's just like being awake to when the bathroom is dirty and cleaning it. So this idea of attending to our planet as well, to keep it clean as best we possibly can. This is a practice that requires great dedication and energy on our part. And it is a way of saving all beings. And it is actually a way of deepening our practice. This recognition of our interrelatedness and intimacy with all things that is born on the cushion can be brought out into the world in our care for all beings in the world. And so the third element that I wanted to talk about today is one that relates with social justice. And I'm considering this sort of the third part in my series of talks on this issue about how enlightenment is not enough. I recently read this article by Angel Kyodo Williams, which I recommend. She's a really wonderful author who's bringing this, among with others, but focusing on her for now, who's bringing this issue of race and social justice into the practice of Zen. Now, a lot of people have sort of felt, I think historically, that this is not really the work of Buddhism. That our work is, on the cushion, and it's our own salvation. And the moment that we bring these types of questions in, now you're talking politics. You're not really talking Zen. I disagree. And for the same reason that I think about our environment, we are so deeply interwoven, all of us, dependent on each other. And we feel this. We feel it in a profound way as we sit on the cushion. You know, it's amazing, the more that we sit, I think, the more compassion we develop. I find that for myself, there's a kind of vulnerability that comes with practice, not some kind of high in the clouds distancing from the world, but rather something quite different, a real recognition of how you make up me and I make up you. The way that, my voice is part of all of us right now, the way that your presence is part of me, part of my awareness right now. Utterly dependent arisings, every single one of us. Not really separate. And the more that we become awake to this quality of our being, that we don't have a separate, fixed self that could be saved, the more we realize that our own salvation depends on the salvation of everyone. And similarly, everyone's salvation depends on our own salvation. This deeply interdependent quality of all beings. One of Angel Kyodo Williams' assertions is that race obscures the path of liberation. This is a sentence that I have just been sitting with, that I've been pondering and bringing into my life as a sort of practice. Race obscures the path of liberation. I think for me, I approach this first kind of intellectually. I might notice the historical fact of this, dating back to slavery. Quite clearly and in a very literal way, race obscured the path to liberation. And that path to liberation was not only obscured for the enslaved, although certainly most horribly for the enslaved. But it was obscured for the slave owner, who did not relate with these human beings as equals. That person was clouded. Their awareness included a kind of conception that was false, that blocked them from being awake to the presence, the living human presences that they enslaved. So we all suffer through racism. We are cut off from one another. We can see this in our sanghas, in how they tend to be segregated. We can see this in our neighborhoods, in the way they tend to be segregated. So we are cut off quite literally from one another quite frequently. And of course, we can bring this into our contemporary society in many other ways. We can notice the way that American and Latinx people are suffering from much higher levels of poverty, lower success in education, higher levels of imprisonment. And we can notice these things and then offer up a couple reasons. Maybe one is that they are worse people. I think that is not true. Maybe the other is that there have been historical and systemic problems that have resulted in these conditions. And if that is the case, we are co-responsible for addressing those conditions. That is what I believe is true. So, I think for me, it's very useful to just hold some of these sentences in my practice, in my mindfulness, in my awareness. In what ways does race obscure the path to liberation for those who are most negatively affected? Now, perhaps those of us who are white can turn away from noticing this. We can enter into realms of denial. But people who suffer from systemic racism are not able to turn away. And if we do, in fact, hold the vow to save all beings with any kind of seriousness, we probably should not turn away from the suffering of fellow beings, which in some way we have a responsibility to address based on our participating in the very same society. So it's useful for me to hold this line and just reflect on how many different ways does race obscure the path of liberation. And to notice it day by day, perhaps to notice it in the ways that I myself am not liberated to interact in a fully human way, in a relaxed way, in a way that is easy and natural with people of color, if I suffer from certain blindnesses and prejudices. And of course, growing up in this society, we all do. We all harbor these prejudices in our minds. Now, maybe we are doing our best to counteract them, but we grew up in this soup of a racist society, so we carry some of these things too, I think. Quite subtle often, maybe just a sense of shyness maybe just a sense of over-eagerness. These are examples that Angel Kyoto Williams gives. Do we notice these things in ourselves? If we do, then we are touched by this. By this issue of race. And the second part to her piece really culminates with the statement that we should all be the cure. Each one of us should be the cure to this issue of race obscuring the path to liberation. That may feel enormously overwhelming. My gosh, how can I be the cure? Well, in a way, I think each of us, in the same way that we might think about the environment, can be the cure by living the vow. Living the vow to liberate all beings. The vow to liberate ourselves from our own prejudices, from our own inhibitions, from the things that may keep us from engaging in this issue in the first place. Our fears of making mistakes. We notice these things. And we work to practice with them, to be awake to them, to relate with these mental phenomena by seeing them clearly and allowing them to release, and then taking a step forward in real time. Perhaps in a moment we're afflicted by shyness or fear, to extend a hand. Of course, there are bigger ways we can engage. Ways politically. Ways that we vote. Ways that we express ourselves in letters. Ways that we engage with schools, which have so many problems around the achievement gap. Inquiring in our own school systems, hey, how are we addressing this problem? Urging our school committees to make it a priority. So many ways to engage, like any social issue. And of course, here in our Sangha, to engage by becoming aware of who we are, to become awake to our own race, to see it, to allow this to be part of our practice, our own constructed identity, whether we are a person of color or whether we are white, to notice it and to realize that that forms an identity that may be invisible to us, especially if we are white. Of course, it wouldn't be invisible to us if we entered into a church that were all black. Then we would feel it. So clearly it's there. Has it been invisible to us? Why? Can we wake up to this hidden identity that we all actually embody, a racial identity that comes about through living in America? Can we see it? There are so many barriers to this practice, one of which is shame. Should shame arise? Can we sit with that and realize, okay, here's shame, I'm present with it, I see it. And then stay with the issue anyway, because people are suffering. People are suffering injustices and inequities in this world. And we realize that we are deeply interwoven and we are part of that. So I read Angel Kyoto Williams' piece with a lot of interest, and I heard her call. One of the last sentences that she wrote was something like, I can't complete my path of liberation until you start yours. Because we're all in this together. There's no other way to attain liberation but together.